Auburn re-adds their pass catching tight end to the 2024 class, and then we got some story time.
In a world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Fine.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Happy Friday. Special edition. Special guest as well. I'm your host, Charlie Five, and we're ready to get after it. Hope everybody had a safe and happy 4th. A lot of celebration, a lot of fun, but we're ready to talk about some Auburn football, a big tight end commit, recommit, talk about what it's like recruiting 5-stars, how you adjust that to the team, and have a little bit of story time. But I got to welcome my special guest, good friend of mine, Auburn legend, NFL veteran, Will Herring, to the show. Sideline reporter now. Sideline reporter Will Herring. What's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you doing, man? Good morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Will, thank you for joining. Yesterday, Auburn had a little bit of fireworks on the recruiting trail. There was a kid, Hollis Oswalt. He was a receiving sort of tight end that was committed to Auburn. I think you'll like this about him. Maybe more than anything, he goes to Hugh Freeze. He was committed for a month or so, goes to Hugh Freeze and says, "Hugh, I really want to take my visits, but I don't feel right being committed, taking these visits. I still love Auburn. I still love what you're doing. I still believe in you. Don't give up on me. I just want to take some visits." He took some visits, came down to the July 4th announcement, and he picks the Auburn Tigers. That right there makes you know you got a good kid on the team.
Yeah, I love what I see in this kid. I've watched a little bit of film on him, and he's athletic in space. He's a long frame. He doesn't move like a 6'6" guy in high school. You wouldn't think he was 6'6". You'd think he was 6'3" or 4". He's got that quick twitch. But what I was most impressed with, and these coaches, man, it's so important to get to know these players and who they are, what their DNA is, as far as do they love football or not. And what I love about this kid, what jumped out to me, was his intensity blocking. Like not even when the ball was coming his way, but like when his teammate was running down the sideline and him seeking contact. A lot of these receivers and a lot of these tight ends that are built like receivers, they shy away from contact. And this kid seemed to seek it out. Now, he's 230 pounds. He's not filled out yet, but he's got a big frame. And to be 6'5", 6'6", 230, I think he can grow into something special here at Auburn.
Yeah, absolutely. So he came in a couple of weeks ago, I think back in either late May, early June. Auburn had a big 7-on-7 camp. And this was when he had opened his recruitment up. And he came in and really showed out as a receiver. I know you can't gain a ton from 7-on-7, but you can get a pretty good idea, especially from the skill position. And he really lit it up. And just having – you see the success you have with Rivaldo Fairweather this past year, having that big, athletic tight end that's a mismatch nightmare. Just talk about what kind of stress does it put on a defense to have a guy like this, to be able to, too big for a defensive back to cover, but too fast for a linebacker to cover. Like, talk about the stress that a guy like this puts on a defense.
Yeah, the tight end position, man, is something that Auburn over the last, I feel like, 10 years, like, has struggled to capitalize on. I do think Rivaldo last year at times, we could get him the ball. Rivaldo's got a lot of tools, a lot of what it takes to create that mismatch. I mean, in a game of football, it's not always just my best 11 on your best 11. Like, 7 of the 11 might be pretty similar matchups. Like, who can I expose? And we saw that last year, like in the Georgia game late in the 4th quarter, like we had no answer for Brock Bowers. And he's the best man. You tip your hat to him. We didn't have an answer. And that's an example of that tight end position. When you have somebody that can move at the speed at which these big guys, these 6, four, six guys are moving, and who do you put on them? Do you put a 4-4 corner, nickel corner, or do you put a little bit longer linebacker or safety? Like, it's a challenge. And a lot of times the answer, at least in the NFL, when I was with Jimmy Graham, like, hit the chemistry he and Drew Brees had together, like, you would have to put two on him. You'd have to occupy that free safety with a safety underneath. Well, like, Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson are licking their chops because they're going to create so much stress from the X and the Z position on the outside. You've got to have, I mean, it's vital to have a guy on the inside that can stress the middle of the field.
Absolutely. And Hugh, that's a big part of Hugh's offense. You go back to looking at what he did with Ole Miss and Evan Engram, having that. It doesn't necessarily have to be your traditional 6'6", 260 tight end. It could be a guy that's 230, 240 pounds that flexes out a little bit. And like you said, create that mismatch. I think Hollis has an opportunity. I'm not going to say Brock Bowers, but he has an opportunity to be a very stressful a stressful tight end for opposing defenses when you put him out there and then he's able to get in space, beat you deep, beat you to the outside. I love this addition, and I like this kid, man. I think he's got a special mindset and very mature already. So yeah, big addition for the Tigers. That's the one you really wanted to get back in the fold and sort of stop the bleeding, so to speak. That even though you're sitting fine in recruiting, there was a little bit of a 10-day lull where people were like, "What's going on?" You lose a little bit of momentum. It's good to go ahead and get another one back on the board. Hopefully, we get another one tomorrow with Jacoby Ward, interior offensive lineman from Savannah, Georgia. But we'll talk about that when it happens. I want to shift gears a little bit, Will, because we're right in the heat of this battle for the number one overall player, not just number one quarterback, but on several recruiting sites, you're the number one overall player in the country, Julian Lewis. Auburn's really never had a kid, I guess, of this caliber that they're sort of right there in the mix for, especially at the quarterback position, going into him ready to sort of shut down his recruitment. Committed to USC. All you hear, it's like Hollywood. You know, you got the big NIL deals. You got all the, you know, hoopla built up around him, a lot of hype. What's it like for dudes on the team? What's it like for guys on the team when you're recruiting, when your coaches are going out and trying to sell a guy like this to come to Auburn, and all you hear is, "Oh, we got this stud coming in. We got this." What's it like for the team when you see the hype build up around a kid who's never even played a down of college football yet?
Well, Charlie Five, I can only use my imagination about as good as you can, because when I played in college, like, this didn't even exist. I guess it did from a high school standpoint, but with the NIL now and so much guys coming in and out, for a guy that hasn't played at the college level, and I would compare it to, like, when I was in the NFL. When I was in the NFL and you have a first round draft pick, you know, top five draft pick, I think there's a level of expectation when that guy comes in. I mean, everybody knows he's getting taken care of financially. And so I mean, you know, you show up to workouts, you want to know, hey, is this guy willing to grind? You show up to practice, you want to know, like, hey, is this guy, has he got it? So there is a level of, like, you know, you gotta earn the respect of your teammates. But most guys, like, you know, when you're in a locker room, everybody wants to win, you know. Yeah. like that, that's, you know, that's what I love about the game of football. Like, whatever background you come from, whatever part of the country you're from, like, when you step on the field, you've got one common goal, and that's to win. Yeah. And the great teams care about winning. They care about the team more than they care about individual accolades. And so that culture is so vital. And that's what these coaches are grooming and trying to piece this roster together. It's like a garden. You're trying to put in good seeds while pulling out the weed that pops up every now and then. This is not going to produce fruit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tried to look at, while you were at Auburn, I tried to come up with like a comparison type recruit to kind of get a little perspective. And the closest thing I could find, and it's a defensive guy, so I feel like you would have had, you know, y'all would have known about this guy coming up and think heard a lot about him. He wasn't from very far away from Auburn, but Trey Blackmon, I think he signed in 2005, mm-hmm. And maybe redshirted, and maybe y'all played together 1 year in 2006, but he was like parade All-American, Gatorade, number one linebacker in the country, five-star. You remember a little bit about that, like how that whole – that recruiting process and then coming into Auburn. I think he redshirted his first year. What was that process like, bringing a kid like that in and redshirting him? Yeah. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously kept up with it back then, but you just got to think it was like caveman days compared to now.
True.
The activity that these kids have with social media and the digital age we live in, if assuming these kids are listening to the noise, and unfortunately, I think most of them probably are, they probably know a lot more about the incoming guys, the incoming freshmen, than I did about Trey Blackmon, or than my teammates did about Trey Blackmon. But like, yeah, we signed a dude, and when Trey showed up, he had all the physical tools. He was explosive. He was fast. He wasn't real tall, and he really didn't have that big of a frame. But he had the physical tools from a maturation standpoint. Like he needed to develop a little bit between the ears, and he redshirted. And unfortunately for Trey, like his career never lived up, I don't think, to his potential. But he was a great teammate to me, but as an older veteran, you know, as a guy that was proven and I really wasn't worried about playing or not playing. Like you invest in a young guy like that, and you want him to develop, because you want the legacy that you've created here, and the guys that have come before you. You want to pass that on to the next generation of guys coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hugh in his latest, the Ambush Auburn Tour event at Lake Martin, he really preached on the culture that is sort of blossoming here at Auburn. And I think that's a big aspect. If you want to go get these five-star guys, you got to let the team know, hey, we're going to go try to get dudes. Like you said, we're going to go try to get dudes every single year. I need you guys to be locked in, help them get acclimated, like you said, so we can build this thing and leave a legacy. I like that. And I think I'm hoping that, you know, if Auburn does end up pulling off this, you know, this big feat from a headlines perspective and landing a kid like Juju Lewis, who's a very, very talented quarterback that with all the hype that's built around him, that culture keeps it together. And it's not like a, you know, there's people start being pitted against each other. So that's big. Culture's big. Culture's definitely big in football.
Let me say just one thing. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that as a player, when you believe that your coach loves you, and number one, and number two, that he can add value to your craft, like your sense of buy-in goes through the roof. And so it's all about relationship. Like, you know, not every coach has done it over the years, but like, that's one thing that Hugh does such a phenomenal job is his kids know that he cares. Okay. Yeah. And then it's up to Coach Freeze, and it's up to the coaches to add value. Like they've got to continue to develop these kids, and more is going to be learned. Like we'll know more a year from now and 2 years from now and 5 years from now. But when they have created the expectation that, hey, you come here, and whether you play immediately a lot, or whether you sit redshirt for a year or play a little bit your freshman year, your ultimate goal is to come here and become a much better football player, to get in the best strength and conditioning program and the nutrition program in the country, and play in front of the wildest fans in the country in the most incredible atmosphere. And you're going to leave here in 3 or 4 years, and you're going to go make a lot of money. Whether you come here and get paid, you know, $100,000 for NIL, or you go somewhere else and make $120,000, like who cares? Like that, those are pennies. come here, develop your craft, know that these coaches are going to love you. And yes, you're still going to have a lot of turnover from NIL, but the more buy-in you can have from the guys that are here that are willing to listen and receive instruction and stay put a year or two and just be patient, Yeah. In a culture that wants immediate gratification, you know, the NIL, the transfer portal just throws a grenade on that. These kids, if you look at the stats, so many more are hurt, in my opinion, by the transfer portal than helped.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I think Hugh is really focused on building from the high school ranks, like you said, so he can have guys here that will at least be here a year or two, and right. They can start to buy into that culture, and then hopefully you can develop them for the long haul. But speaking of working on your craft, you know, I know people remember you as a former Auburn player, NFL player, sideline reporter now. Last year, I think, was your first season, correct, as a sideline reporter. But what do you do? What do you do now? What's your craft that you're getting after that you use to provide to compete? Tell us what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I'm a mortgage lender for a local mortgage company. We're licensed in Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee. So thankful for my team. I've got a team here locally in Auburn. And so anybody looking to buy a house, bless your heart if you have to refinance right now, because we all know interest rates are up high. But if you need to buy a house or you need to refinance, you know, I help people with that mortgage process, okay, whether it's new construction, whether it's an existing home. And I love it, man. It's an honor to walk, people through. For most of them, it's the largest financial commitment, during investment in their life. And so it's a pretty taxing process for them emotionally. And, to be a part of that, I take it tremendously. I'm honored at the opportunity. I take it very serious, me and my team. And, so yeah, we're based here. Our branch is based here in Auburn, but like I said, we're licensed in three states and would be honored to help anyone if they're looking for a mortgage.
Absolutely. So how cool would that be? You want to go purchase a new house in Auburn? Will Herring could be your mortgage officer to help you through.
The mortgage guy, Will Herring.
He could be your mortgage guy through the whole process. I got all of his details in the show notes below. Be sure to check those out. Email, links to his My Site page, everything. I do a lot of business with Will as well, and CMG Financial. Those guys are legit, so definitely check them out. Show them some love. Tell them War Eagle. Make a friend out of it as well. All right, the last portion I'm excited about, because I love stories. I love telling stories, and this one's going to be a little bit different because I have a story from a good friend of mine that I want to talk about with Will and sort of break down his memories of it and things like that. But before I do, Will, I think there's a stat that you could possibly be leading Auburn in that I don't think you may not even know you lead in. I was looking up the years you play, and I was really cross-referencing it with when Trey Blackmon was here so I could kind of figure out what the crossover was. I think you're the leading yards per carry rusher in Auburn history at 27 yards or carried. Has anybody ever told you that before? Is that the case?
I was unaware of that until probably 5 years ago.
Okay? Yeah.
Since learning that, you better believe that my kids know that daddy – is the all-time leading rushing yards per carry guy at Auburn.
So I remember, the one in 2006. I think it was against Washington State. It was a fake punt. Am I right?
Yeah.
You were the up back, and I think you caught it, and you were gone. Nobody.
The punt return tackle. I wasn't gone, okay? I was gone for like 32 yards. Don't sell me short on 26. It was 32. Okay.
Okay. My bad. I was just,
but no, going into that game, I told my parents, I was like, look, we've got to, you know, we have fake punts and field goals from time to time. And you're like, we're probably not going to run this. Like going into that game, I was like, y'all don't blink when we punt, because we're going to run this. And by golly, like, we took the field three or four times looking for this certain formation of theirs. And basically it's where they double the gunners, both gunners, which now the spread punt, things have changed. But when you double the gunners and you got one guy deep, that means you got six. And we got like eight on their six. And Tubbs called it a couple times. And late in the game, we were up, I think we were up one score and backed up on the 20. Riverboat Gambler dialed it up again. Now, I'm taking the field and I'm like, man, you've got bigger, you know what, than I got. And we took the field and there it was. And so we just called a cadence. We canceled it a few times. You like white it, check white. And then snap. Well, they gave it to us and it opened up like the Red Sea. I didn't get touched until Michael Bumpus, the punt returner.
Wow.
Who later was my teammate in Seattle.
Yeah.
He tackled me. So we had a good laugh about that in the Seattle locker room years later.
Did the Auburn locker room give you a little bit of grief for getting brought down by the punt returner?
Absolutely, they did. Yeah. they didn't even wait for the locker room. It was a sideline. Like when I got to the sideline, I was getting made fun of more than I was congratulated. I was like, I thought it was a sweet run personally, but y'all can think what you want.
No, so it had it down for a 47-yard run on Sports Reference, but there was another one that another carry that you had that it registers for you in 2004 that I don't remember. Do you remember that one for like 12 or 15 yards?
2004,
the undefeated season,
would have been like Rose Green hit that guy and knocked him out, and I picked the ball.
So they registered that for a carry, I guess. So
I don't know. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, what's weird is like of my interceptions, most of them, I'm trying to think like I was like stepping out of bounds or too unathletic to stay on my feet. Like most of my interceptions were like, I didn't. So I don't know what was the 11-yard carry in 2000. Yeah.
It may be incorrect. Regardless, you have if we wipe that one away, you still got one carry for 47 yards. So that carry, I'll edit the record book, get that one knocked out because we want that 47 yards per carry to stand in the record books.
That's right.
No, but the story I have, I think this is a great story, and I kind of teased you a little bit about it earlier in the week. But trash talking on the field. What would you rate your trash talking game on the field in college in NFL 1 to 10? Would you say you're pretty solid or how would you rank yourself?
I would say it just depends. I would like to think I don't start it, but if you dish it, I'll give it back, or if you start it, I'll do my best to finish it.
Yeah,
there were games where, you know, it was an intense game and. You know, you have a big hit on a guy and you help him up. And like, we're out here just competing together. But then there were times where like a guy decided he wanted to like flex on you or try to be disrespectful. And then like, okay, it's gloves are off. And so that's what football is about, though. It's an emotional game. I think about some of the Iron Bowls. Those really jump out to me. There was one game, it was a pillow fight. It was like a Western Kentucky, and the receiver like found me and told me that like I was garbage. And I was like, all right.
That's long.
And so I was just headhunt. I didn't even care where the ball was the rest of the game. Like I was gonna remind him that he just got lit up by garbage. And so it does get chippy at times, but you really gotta, you know, that, I mean, we see it every Saturday, like, you know, it's usually not the guy that initiates, is the guy that retaliates
exactly
team. And so, you know, my crazy defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, whom I love playing for in New Orleans, crazy. It's a run over dog.
Yeah.
But his motto was live on the edge, play on the edge, never hurt the team.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, I think that's a good, healthy mindset for somebody on defense.
So my story, best friend, one of my best friends from high school, probably my best friend from high school, actually ended up signing with Alabama as a tight end. True freshman, 2004. Everybody in front of him gets hurt. So he starts like the last three games of the season. And if you remember, we play in – obviously you remember, but Auburn's playing in Tuscaloosa, undefeated. And believe it or not, like I think that – did they won the toss and took the ball. Is that right? And just walked down the field twice on us.
Yeah. I don't remember that. I do remember – I think we had a few turnovers – in the first half, and we were backed up a few times, and we made field goals.
They went down the field at least twice, pretty easy, because we ended up having fourth and goal stands. But regardless, on one of the plays, it was third and goal from like the two or the three, and he's a tight end, hasn't had a catch, hasn't had recorded a stat yet. They run some little play action, and he says, "I'm literally on the back of the end zone by myself. I'm not even moving. I'm standing still." And I think the quarterback was Spencer Pennington, fires it at me, and I got my hands up. I mean, it's just coming in. And all of a sudden, this paw comes out of nowhere and knocks it down. And of course, it's Will Herring. He said, and I have nightmares about it. I still call him Dream Killer. He was that was my touchdown in the Iron Bowl, and Will Herring took it away. But the best line, I want to see if you remember this. The best thing about it is, and he wouldn't say this. He said that you got up, you looked at him, and you said, "You shouldn't have had your hands up because you weren't going to catch it anyway."
No.
we had a little bit of a network issue. Sit tight, Will. We're going to get – yeah, but that was a story that my buddy had his hands up. Will jumps in, knocks it down, and then and obviously kills the dream. So Will unfortunately has dropped out. No big deal. That's kind of on brand for the Top Button Podcast. I'm so thankful that he jumped on and fired down a 27 minutes of just absolute boog. So I really appreciate him from joining. We're going to have Will back a lot more. Be sure to check him out. I got all the details in the description. He can help you out definitely on the mortgage side, construction, new construction, whatever it is, he can help you out there. So definitely be sure to check him out. Follow me on Twitter, @_Charlie_5. If you like this video, like it. If you like this channel, subscribe to it and get in the comments. Let me know what you think. What's your favorite Will Herring memory? Is it his fake punt 50-yard carry? Is it an interception or the final play against South Carolina in 2006 where I think he knocks the ball down to end the game? Whatever. He's going to be here more and more, and I really appreciate him from jumping on. Good friend of mine. So, guys, I really appreciate it. Y'all have a great weekend. Hopefully we're getting a commitment tomorrow, and if we do, we'll break it down again on Monday. So this is another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay button.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.